You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. David, are you ready to just dive into some Pelicans talk?
Oh, we are here for it, my friend Colton. I'm ready.
Oh my goodness, people are just going to be sick of us after we talk about this one. We did not talk about the Pelicans loss on Pelicans win on Locked On Wolves the other day because I had Lucas Han on the show. He is the host of the Locked On Clippers. Definitely go check out that podcast. It's the November 30th edition of Locked On Wolves. So today we are going to be breaking down what happened in the victory over the Pelicans. I think if the Timberwolves played the Pelicans 82 times during the season, they'd probably get like a 1 or 2 seed, something like that.
Man, for what it's worth, I have assumed that they were going to lose both of these games against New Orleans, and they have won both of them because I think the Pelicans match up really well with the Timberwolves. But they are 2-0 against New Orleans, and so I have been wrong about that, and happily so.
Just for the record, we do terrible things to this team when we talk about them on Fridays. We're just going to avoid the OKC game tonight,
hey,
right?
No, we're 1-1. We're 1-1. They won last week.
They did. You know what? I'm not going to get into it. I'm going to give us credit for the
1-1. I'm going to give us the win for that. It is 1-1. Scoreboard.
Okay, so I think the biggest thing in the Pelicans game, I would have to say, is the Anthony Davis tossing.
You have to start there, right? Like, even as good as some things were for the Timberwolves, like, there's no way to talk about this game without bringing up the fact that Anthony Davis, arguably the Pelicans' best player, and DeMarcus Cousins has every right to be in that discussion.
And the Pelicans' calmest player.
Yeah, from what we've seen, obviously Boogie has the reputation that he has for a reason. Like, I don't want to cite stats that I don't have in front of me, but I know he's been near or at the top of the league in technical fouls almost every year of his career. He's gotten tossed from games. He's just lost his mind. There's so many instances of that. Whereas Davis is just, I don't think I'd ever even seen Davis angry on the court before Wednesday night's game. And for him to just totally lose his mind, let's not also understate the fact that Davis was balling in this game. Like, when they took him out, he had played 17 and a half minutes when he left the game, 7 of 13, 3 of 3 from the line, 5 boards, 17 points in 17 minutes. Like, he was in the process of going off.
Yeah, he was just destroying when he was playing. And so I'm really glad he got tossed, just because I feel like it would have been one of those 35 and 15 nights for him.
But it doesn't make any sense, though, right? Like, yeah, he had a couple of calls not go the right way for him when he and Towns were battling. But for him to just completely lose his mind and get 2 techs in 15 seconds of game time, because that's what it was. I went back and checked the play-by-play. 15 seconds of game time between his 2 technical fouls, and he was just gone. And he was furious. Like,
yeah. I mean,
the fact that, like, it's been said a lot of times on Twitter and on various podcasts ever, the fact that Boogie was holding him back is just the strangest thing I've ever seen. Like,
oh my gosh, I talked about this a little bit yesterday with Lucas. Is that how messed up is the play when DeMarcus Cousins is the one saying, "Hey, we got to calm down here."
I've watched a lot of Boogie Cousins over the last few years. The Kings were my favorite league pass team for the last couple of years, even when they've been bad before the trades. I've watched a pretty good bit of Boogie's games. And, man, never has he been the one stopping the conflict. Not even once.
Yeah, I expected him to be clapping for that interaction, but guess not. I do think, just in fairness to Davis, I think when he got tossed, half of it was from the ref just surprised that Davis was actually yelling. And just because Draymond Green does this kind of stuff pretty much every game, where he, like, chases down the ref and is screaming about a call.
Yeah, and it's part of the thing with, like, everybody's got a reputation, right? Because, like, you expect this from Boogie. You expect this from Draymond. You expect this from, like, a huge handful of guys through the league. Even like, guys like your Tim Duncans, your people who, like, they're going to protest calls in a rather vociferous manner if they get them going against them. And Davis has never been as much that guy. So for him to not only protest, but to get as mad as he did, like, it's interesting. And to be fair to Davis, I don't think I made this point as well as I could have. I recapped this game at zone coverage. And I don't think I made the point as well as I could have. The foul calls against him were garbage. Like, not the technicals. The technicals were very well deserved. The fouls that he was mad about getting called for were trash. They were terrible calls.
Yeah, the fouls weren't great.
So he, like, the fact that he was mad about how the game was being refereed, totally fair. But
especially the one that set him off, that last foul, that one.
They were just terrible calls. So, like, the New Orleans crowd made their displeasure very well known, and they had, like,
all 10 of them.
I'd be nicer than that. That, like, I have been to the Smoothie King Center. The crowd's better than you give them credit for. It's no, like, you think of Atlanta, and also, we don't get to talk crap about other teams' arenas.
At least we're not named the Smoothie King Arena.
Right there, like, we cannot talk crap about other people's arenas. We've had the lowest attendance in the league for like 6 years straight. We don't get to do that yet.
Just let me have my moment.
No, absolutely not. You will sit down for the rest of the week until the Timberwolves prove that they can get out of the bottom 5 in attendance in the league. We do not get to talk crap about other teams' arenas.
You know what? You know what? You make a fair point. I did want to draw attention to DeMarcus Cousins. I thought they did a fairly good job throughout the game, and it was just a little bit of an off night for him too. But 17 points, 10 rebounds, that's definitely probably the best case scenario when you're playing Boogie Cousins, especially when you don't have Anthony Davis. That felt like an area where he could really kind of take the game over, and there just never was a time where he really controlled the game, I thought. And so I thought that was just a good job by the defense of the Timberwolves to make sure that he never really ran away with anything.
Well, and that transitions nicely to one of the best things about the Timberwolves in that game, which was the fact that wasn't Towns dealing with him. That was Mr. Gorgui Dieng having his best game of the season on both ends of the court, because he was Cousins' primary marker throughout the game, and he did a fantastic job on Boogie.
And he did a great job on offense, like you're saying, on both sides. Offense, too, 19 points. Although I would disagree with you, I think the best part of this game was Aaron Brooks going off, 50% shooting. What a stud. 5 points. Just
get
contributing.
Out of here. I'm hanging up the phone.
Contributor. What a monster.
No, you and Dane can talk about Aaron Brooks next time you got Dane on. I don't know if you've noticed on Twitter the fact that Dane Moore, our colleague at Zone Coverage, is about literally the only person defending Aaron Brooks on these Twitter streets.
I got to go through and favorite all of those tweets that he puts out.
I want you and Dane to spend some time talking about Aaron Brooks' virtues the next time you're on.
Moore, I would be happy to. And I was the one, too, when they signed him. I was assigned to cover it and write a little article on it. And I got caught up for like 2 hours on just a random Tuesday morning of Aaron Brooks' film. So
all right.
I went down a strange YouTube loophole, and you know what? I came out a better man for it.
Fair enough. I cannot hate on the YouTube rabbit holes, because my vice in YouTube basketball highlights is that I go watch Corey Brewer highlights on a regular basis.
Oh my gosh, so, I love that.
Brew is one of my favorite players, but Brew is neither here nor there. We can talk about Brew when we play the Lakers on Christmas.
Have you seen? Okay, quick side trail. Okay. Quick, just before we dive into a little bit more on this game. Have you seen the videos of when he and Noah would be at Florida, and like almost every class they would walk into, people would stand up and clap for them, especially on that run that they had going into March Madness? Have you seen
these? That team was amazing. That like 06 Gator team, they were so good.
It was, but I can't imagine being a student at a school and going to class and having people just stand up and cheer for me when I got in the building.
Well, but imagine like I cannot personally attest to this, but I will say that if you think about college basketball, one of the bigger upsets of all time was The University of Northern Iowa beating Kansas in the round of 32. I forget who was on that. It was the Morris Twins Kansas team, who were like the best team in the country. Lost in the round of 32 to my University of Northern Iowa Panthers, with Ali Farouk-Manesh hitting the shot. I never had classes with any of the guys in that basketball team, but I would imagine that they got standing ovations for the rest of the year.
Class. I'm not saying I can't believe that the classes would clap for them. I can totally see that happening. I can't imagine being a student and having to be a college student and dealing with the celebrity of a Division I athlete, especially at a school like Florida where the basketball program is so big. That'd be so weird for me, that connect of, oh yeah, I'm a basketball star and I still have to go to class.
I mean, I guess, like, but with these guys, with so many of the, like, the guys that are out there with this one, and we've got a lot of them on this team, right? If you think about, like, the backgrounds of Wiggins and Towns and even Tyus Jones to some extent, like, they've been that guy, the guy, since they were, like, 10. And so it's for dudes like you and me who may not be the most athletically skilled people out there.
How dare you?
And you would not be talking to me on this podcast if you had a scholarship at the D1 school right now, Colton.
You, oh my goodness, I cherish these morning talks we have. I would always talk. Best part of my week.
That's these guys' lives, right?
No, yeah, that's a fair point.
I'm sure that if you were in a setting where you were able to talk to like a Wiggins or a Jones or a Towns about this, they'd say the same thing. It's right. Like, yeah, it's like when I was in high school or in college, it's like everybody on campus knew who I was because I was a basketball star. I was a guy. And so that's like they've grown up with this. So that's not – I don't think it's out of their paradigm at all, right?
I suppose. I just don't have enough people clapping for me when I get into class. You know what? Maybe I'd do better in class if I had that.
Well, maybe you should, like, talk to your classmates because you're still in school, right? Like, we can make this happen.
Yeah, you haven't taken a class with me, but nobody's standing up and clapping for me. I can promise you.
Well,
that.
That's unfortunate, man. We got to work on that. We got to step the game up. You got to promote better, man.
We have gotten just wildly off topic here. I'm gonna bring us
you
back.
You started it.
I did. You're I take full responsibility. I'm wrapping us back in.
So anyway,
Wiggins.
I can shift this because I don't want to talk about Andrew Wiggins. I want to talk about Tyus Jones.
You know what?
You had to bring up Aaron Brooks. And Aaron Brooks, being the backup point guard that he hit, is, even in his 2-for-4, 50% shooting outcome, Aaron Brooks was only trusted to play 7 minutes of this game because Tom Thibodeau trusted Tyus Jones to play the most minutes of any player in this game.
41 minutes.
41 minutes and 35 seconds. And he was great for all of them. Plus 20, highest on the team. 6-for-9 from the field. 16 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, 4 steals, only one turnover. He's basically, I think it's like his only turnover since he started playing the majority of the point guard minutes with Jeff Teague out. He has been phenomenal in his role.
He has done a really great job, too, of just always kind of being around where the ball is. Like, he's always had a pretty solid number of steals since he started starting. He's always putting up assists, scoring. He's just around where the play is happening, whether it's on offense or defense. And his motor hasn't stopped. And like you said, monster amount of minutes, and his motor did not stop. He's been really impressive. This is the guy I was waiting to see. And honestly, it's going to be interesting. I don't think you bench Jeff Teague by any extent, but you do have to get Jones more minutes after this stretch that he's been on once Teague comes back.
We had a long talk about this on Locked On, Wolves Wired yesterday, including we had Timberwolves trade play announcer Dave Benz on the show, and Tyus was a pretty big topic of discussion because it's like, yeah, after this stretch, is his minute load just going to go back to being like 14, 15 minutes a game? Because it doesn't seem like everything we have seen so far, even when he was coming off the bench, is that the team plays better when he's on the floor. And that's a quality that the Timberwolves need this year. And for this team to be at its peak level, they need both he and Jeff Teague to be good and integral parts of this team. That is an inarguable fact. But I think that you may see somewhat of a shorter leash for Teague if he struggles. Because there's so many times. We've seen enough games of Teague to know that some nights he just doesn't have the shot going in. And some nights it's just like stuff's not working for him for whatever reason on the offensive end. So then it's like, okay, maybe if it's just not working for Teague that night, if he's having an off night, just bring in Tyus a little bit earlier, give Tyus a little bit more burn. let your team run a little bit differently. We also talked a little bit about the fact that they could maybe share the floor, Jones and Teague. Dave Benz did not like that idea. I still think it could be possible in the right situations, because one of the things that we like Teague for to begin with is that he's capable of playing off the ball, which obviously in a lineup where he'd be functionally playing the two, I think could be a role that he'd be okay at. That lineup obviously would have some pretty serious defensive questions playing Jeff Teague, who is very much a point guard and a point guard's body at the two. But I don't know. Like I'm curious.
Yeah, I just want to make this clear. You can't bench Teague, especially not yet in the season with the contract that he's got.
There's no way they bench Teague.
Yeah, and like, so that's not.
Let's just rule that right out.
Yeah, I want to just make sure that's clear. That's not what I'm advocating for at all. You definitely need to see Jones's minutes go up, though, and I really do think, especially in the proper time during a game, and if there's a really good matchup for it, there is a scenario where you can have Teague and Jones out there on the floor at the same time. I think that could work. Maybe I'm just getting greedy, but I really think that could work just because of the way Teague plays off ball.
This was my point yesterday on Wolves Wired, is that I think that there are situations where that can work. And I think that, and I mean, I've been advocating for them to try different things with lineups all year, because I think that they've got some interesting pieces that could be combined in interesting ways in the right situations. Some of the ideas are a little crazier than most, but like, it's just, you've got all these interesting pieces and you've got guys who make your team better when they're on the floor. So find ways to get those guys on the floor and let them play more.
Well, like, what does Brad Stevens do in the beginning of the season? He's experimenting with all kinds of lineups and throwing different kinds of lineups out there. And he knows his personnel well enough so that he's not throwing up a lineup that's going to give up 20 points in like 30 minutes or something, or 20 points in like 10 minutes or something crazy like that, where he's just going to kill the team. But he is experimenting with lineups and trying different things and seeing what works. Just because, go ahead.
This is always the Tibbs question, right? Is he's always been really, really, really set in his ways and really set in what he likes. That's something we've known about him. It can be a good thing about him. Obviously, like, the defensive system is a whole, like, a lot of his reputation is built around that. We've talked at length about that many times. There's going to be much more discussion of that later. But like, with how he's handled rotations early this season, the only times interesting things have happened with his rotations is when players have been injured. Whether that's when Gorgie was out for a few games earlier this year, and we saw the Bielitsa Gibson front court that worked really well a couple of times, or this stretch where Bielitsa and Teague have been out, and we've seen Tyus flourish in extended minutes, and Gorgie have one of his better games of the year, getting to play alongside Taj Gibson. And so it's just like, these are the things that I wish would happen without his hand having to be forced. And it doesn't seem to be his style to look at those things, as opposed to like the Brad Stevens types, kind of the newer age coaches who are willing to mess with stuff and try new things.
All right, we're going to talk about the OKC game that's going down tonight. We're going to talk about that in just a minute here, but just a couple more things I wanted to get to on the Pelicans game. So first of all, we've talked about this before, how Gorgie's he seems like he was trying to find his role coming off the bench and what that was like for him. Do you think this is one of those games where we'll look back in late December and say, oh, that's where he figured out in that Pelicans game? That's when he figured out how to play, because this was a really great game for him. Do you think this is a sign of good things to come, or do you think he was just taking advantage of a matchup that he was excelling at?
It's so weird that the matchup he excels at is against DeMarcus Cousins, who is one of the best centers in the NBA. Because this is now both of the Pelicans games this year. The two matchups with New Orleans have been his two best games of the year. Like, which is so interesting to me. So, like, I hope so, but he had
just
a great game
against
New Orleans, the first time they played, which was like a month ago, and has still been struggling. I know he's still got a little bit of a lingering hand issue that I keep forgetting is a thing from when he missed some games earlier. So he might still not be all the way right physically, which could be contributing to maybe him not scoring as much, not shooting as well on things that aren't like layups. But we saw the jumper a couple times. We saw the old trebuchet come out for the mid-range, and it worked. It looked as good as years past when his mid-range jumpers felt like they always went in. And like, I don't know. I hope so. I think we need to see two or three straight games where he's really contributing and doing the things that, like, we know he's capable of. We've had Gorgie on this team for, what, four years now? We know what Gorgie is to a large extent. We've just got to see some consistency from him this year.
And then I want to talk about him just a little bit because I really enjoy talking about Andrew Wiggins. 28 points went off this game, 10 for 18 shooting, hit 50% of his three-point shots, 3 for 6. What did you think of his performance, and do you think he's like slowly just building because he's starting out the year, he's hitting that 20-point mark pretty steadily. Now do you think you see it bump up throughout the year, maybe hit 22, 25 points pretty regularly throughout the season? Do you think that he's just going to keep growing offensively, kind of like we've seen him grow on defense?
I think that the most important stat to watch with Wiggins in the coming weeks is going to be that three-point shooting because he's struggled a bit at the start of the year. He hasn't been that consistent of a three-point shooter ever in his career, right? His career average is only 32.8%. He last year was his best season at a little over 35. Currently for this season, he's at 32%. And going 3 for 6 last night, he had good shots that looked in rhythm, went right where they were supposed to go at important points in the game. If he can hit a point where his three-point shooting starts to get hot and raises that percentage, it's going to do so much for his game and for his confidence. Because that was the thing, is when the shots were going in from range, I think it helped a ton with his confidence. So that was the thing that stuck out for most of me. Obviously, he led the team in scoring, but it was one of those nights where it's like he did, and he had these moments where it was one of those games where he had the max player moment, right? Like, there's just these shots and these drives to the hoop where he does things that very few players in the NBA can do.
Yeah, I'm of the mindset where I want to see him take 6 to 7 shots from three a night. And maybe some of those nights are he's just got to do that thing where he kind of shoots himself into a hot streak. But when there's so many guys who some nights they shoot 5 times from three, sometimes they don't take a shot from three, he's got to be one of those guys that consistently is stretching the floor for the team and making sure that he's putting up quite a few three-point shots just to have some sort of stretch to this offense.
Yeah, he's only taken six or more attempts from three in a game in 6 of the 22 games so far this season.
Yeah, so what is his average, like 3.5, 4?
It's 4.2 right now.
Yeah, that's got to be at least 6. I'd prefer it at like 7 or so.
Well, it's like, and there's a couple games where, like, the ironically, 3 of their wins, he's only taken 1 or 2 threes, which just like even in the best games, that's not what you want to see him do. You have to get him shooting. You have to get that consistency up because that's such an important part of both his game and the Timberwolves' offense functioning. Because he and Butler have both got to be at least relevant from three.
Yeah, for sure. But I like the shooting night he had. Great night for the Timberwolves all around. Solid win. Now let's move on to a game a little closer here. So we're going to talk about the breakdown a little bit of the OKC game that's happening tonight. First question, do you think the Timberwolves can go 3-0 against the Thunder this year? Do you think they have it in them?
Ironically, my gut says yes. But my gut also says that this feels exactly like one of these games that it feels very much like the Timberwolves should win for a whole bunch of reasons, which means that they'll lose it.
the optimism.
It's not even specifically about the Timberwolves. It's the fact that the Thunder have been so bad recently. Like, the Thunder have lost 3 straight games now to not very good teams. Well, the Detroit loss, Detroit's a good team. But they got whooped by Dallas and Orlando in their last 2 games.
You know what they say about Dallas, the sleeping giant.
We've seen the Timberwolves play both of those 2 teams this year, and while they struggled a bit with Orlando, like, man, Dallas is not a good team. And they put up Oklahoma City in a 4-quarter game, put up 81 points against the Dallas Mavericks with the players they have.
Yeah, that was really bad. Although the game that OKC had against the Magic, it almost was like they were saying, and I know this isn't what they literally had planned, but it almost is like their game plan was, well, we don't know really how to stop Aaron Gordon, so we're just going to let him do whatever he wants, and hopefully we're good enough to beat a great night from Aaron Gordon. And he had 40 points and I think 15 rebounds, so that he went off, and it didn't really seem like there was a real attempt to really try and get him out of a rhythm.
This is so ironic. I hadn't looked further back than those previous three losses for OKC. OKC's lost five of their last six, with their only win being a 17-point victory over the Warriors. Right? Like, this is the problem, is this team can beat anyone, any team in the NBA, including the best of the best. But, they like, you want to talk about inconsistency. There's a reason this team's 8-12 on the year. Like, they just don't win games.
No,
and we've
yeah.
seen, like, we've played, the Timberwolves have played them twice, and both have been close wins for Minnesota. They've been close games. It's not like they've blown the Thunder out of the building. But it just doesn't seem... It's so weird. It doesn't seem like this team knows how to win yet, which, given the amount of number of players they have that are great, legitimately great players, there's something weird going on with this team. So it's one of those things that it's like, based on current form for both teams, it seems like the Timberwolves should win this game handily. But.
Yeah, but these teams are strange.
Both teams are strange.
Yep.
Both teams have weird inconsistencies. And you still probably give an overall talent edge to Oklahoma City, I would say.
Yeah, I think you have to. And to the point of the two wins for the Timberwolves, they were tight, but both of them required pretty great fourth quarters from the Thunder to even get back in the game. So they were the first game they struggled. The second game they looked really good in that first half. And
the counterpoint is that the Timberwolves are the worst fourth quarter team in the NBA, comfortably.
True, true. But then I do like the idea of the Timberwolves getting an advantage early and forcing, because really the game is a mental game when you're playing the Thunder, I would argue, because what you're trying to do is force Melo and Russell into that, oh, I've got to do the whole thing isolation basketball mode, where they feel like they have to get a score on every single possession down the stretch, and so they play more isolation basketball, because then you're almost taking Paul George out of it for the other team.
Yeah, that's. I think I tweeted when I was looking ahead at this game a couple of days ago that I want the Wolves to just go out there and massacre the Thunder in the first quarter. Like, just run them out of the game. Run them out of their own building. And just get them all up in their heads. I think that that's the best way to beat this team. And I think that they're vulnerable right now. It's one of those you see people talking about considering if Billy Donovan's the right fit for this roster 20 games in, which is a bit early, but with the expectations they have and with the roster they build, I don't think it's unfair, the fact that you're hearing rumblings about Billy Donovan not being the right fit, the fact that you hear teams starting to sniff around, hey, Paul George, you want to still stick this out for this year? Because you're expiring at the end of the year. You can move to another team for a playoff run if this team's not going to be good enough for you.
All right. Yeah. Well, the thing that you really want to see if you're a Timberwolves fan is like Russell Westbrook just yelling at teammates like mid second quarter or something like that, because things are falling apart. But I wanted to ask you, so if it comes to it where end of December, this team is still out of the playoffs standings and maybe like four or five games back, if you're faced with the choice, do you trade Melo or Paul George?
I think if they're even still in touching distance, you stay in, especially because at least a couple of teams that are ahead of them in the standings are still pretty vulnerable looking. Because if you look at the playoff standings right now, the Thunder are sitting ninth in there a couple of games back. But the teams that are ahead of them right now, as I quickly pull up the standings, include Utah, who are really struggling with injuries, New Orleans, who I don't think anybody thought we're going to be as good as they've been to start the season, even though the Timberwolves have two wins over them. And Denver, who have Paul Millsap out for an extended period, who Nikola Jokic got hurt last night, they're not sure of the timetable on his time. And Portland, who, again, people thought were going to have it down this year, and the Wolves themselves, who have been remarkably inconsistent and have some advanced stats that say they might not be as good as their 13-9 record says. So, like, if we get to the end of December and they're still sticking, like, this 2, 3, 4 games back of the 8 seed, I think they absolutely stick it out. But if they just keep getting blown out by bad teams over and over and over again, I'd start to wonder if there might be a coaching change coming.
I almost wonder if, just because OKC is the way they are, if they go for trade before coaching change, maybe. Or maybe I'm just off on that.
I don't know. Like, right now, part of this season for them is we have to convince Paul George to stay, right? Because Paul George is a free agent in the offseason, no matter what they do. So if this isn't working, I don't know. I could see it both ways, right? Because you'd have to think that they move George if they don't think they're going to get him to stay. And right now, I'd say they're going to have a real hard time getting him to commit to staying with how unstable things appear there. So, yeah, I guess I could see the trade side too. But I don't know. I don't feel like Billy Donovan's job is very safe, whether fair or unfair. That's how things tend to work out. Not necessarily in Oklahoma City, but in the league as a whole. If things are going bad, you fire the coach.
I just struggle to understand how they get better if you trade Paul George.
They don't. They're done. They don't.
All right. Thank you. I'm glad we're on the same page for that one. Because if you trade Paul George and let's say they don't do it for draft picks, let's say they do it for players, you're still stuck with Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony with the same problems that they've been having all season. I think if you get rid of Carmelo and you have Russell and Paul George, I think then you can start to maybe work on the chemistry of the offense and get some things clicking on that side.
Yeah, but that's the problem, is there's no way you can guarantee George resigns. Not even a little bit. And
no, that's true.
Given the number of indications that he could be headed to Los Angeles at the end of the season, like, it's impossible to take that risk. Especially after you've done all you can do to bring a team of stars around Russell Westbrook. Like, I don't know what they could get for George that would – I don't think it makes them a contender this year. I think it has to be draft picks if they're going to do anything. And I don't know what team's going to ship out a first-round draft pick that's going to be at all relevant for a six-month rental of Paul George. Tops.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation for sure.
It's a tricky, tricky situation for them.
Very delicate.
They needed to be good. Like, yeah. With what they built, with bringing in George the way they did, they needed to be good. And it's very interesting how it looks with their guys on the other side of that Paul George trade playing so well in Indiana to start this year.
Victor Oladipo.
And nobody expected that, right? Like, everybody thought that was a terrible trade for the Pacers, and on the balance of power, it probably was. But so far this season, Depot and Sabonis have both been absolutely balling for Indiana, which is awesome for them. It's great for them as players. And on the other side, you have Oklahoma City struggling the way they have. But
we have to give some predictions for the people and head out here. But I do want to say, now that you bring it up, how did we not see this coming? How did we not see that Victor Oladipo is going to be better than this? Because and judge him solely on the fact that he was next to Russell Westbrook while he was trying to go for triple-doubles all season. Like, how could we not think that he was going to be better than in OKC? It just makes so much sense now that he's out of it.
I think you could expect that he would be better. I don't think you could expect that he would be this much better. Like, the Pacers have wildly exceeded expectations so far. Only 12-10, but people thought they were going to be a bad team this year.
That's true, but it almost looks like they won that trade now because Victor Oladipo is playing so well, and everybody thought it would be a garbage trade. At the same time, when you look back at it, even if you're not expecting Oladipo to play this well, he's still got a way better ceiling than we were giving him credit for.
You cannot say that Indiana won this trade until Paul George signs with another team or is traded away. That is what I will say. Like, until this Thunder experiment is dead, the Thunder win this trade because they have Paul George.
That's a good asterisk. If he re-signs with them, then they won trade. If he goes to LA at the end of the season.
Yeah, if they traded the stuff they traded for 1 year of him and that's it, that is – and it was always the risk, right, with any team trading for Paul George. Is like, we're giving it up for maybe 1 year of him and a chance to convince him to re-sign with our team. So there was always going to be this risk attached to it. And they traded away like we can go back and look at articles from when that Paul George trade went down. People laughed at what Indiana got in that trade and probably shouldn't have. You're right. But Paul George is a very good basketball player that still currently plays for the Oklahoma City Thunder. until he does not play for the Oklahoma City Thunder anymore, the Thunder won that trade.
No, that's true. All right, give me one or two things to look for in this OKC Timberwolves matchup.
I'm going to go pessimistic on this. I expect Russell Westbrook to have a big night tonight at home. It's been too long for the Thunder, and I was as down as anybody on this team before the start of the season. I can't see them continuing to be this bad without having one of those nights where they just go off. Like, again, they beat Golden State 4 games ago comfortably.
Yeah.
Have they been on the road and are coming home? Yeah, they were in. So they're coming back from that road loss in Orlando, and their last home game they got embarrassed. Well, nope, they've been on the road for a bit. So this is returning home after two bad road losses. It kind of feels like this might be a bounce back game for Oklahoma City. So I'd look for probably a big game from at least Westbrook. And whether or not, I'm not saying the Timberwolves can win the game, I think that the Thunder should look better than they've looked recently in this game. That would be my expectation.
Gosh, you would hope so. I'm looking for Crawford to have another solid game, another quiet game off the bench, and just all of a sudden you're in the third quarter and he's got like 15 points already or something like that.
Yep, it could be a Crawford game. The other thing I would look for, speaking of bounce back games, is I would look for Karl Anthony Towns to try and have a bounce back game tonight, because he was a non-factor in the New Orleans game. Only 20 minutes because of significant foul trouble caused primarily by bad decisions. I think 4 of his 5 fouls in that game were offensive fouls. And he really was a complete non-factor. And the Timberwolves won the game without him, which is great. But I can't imagine that how that game shook down sat well with Towns over the last couple of days. And if we think back to previous matches with Oklahoma City, first game against Oklahoma City this year, he kind of got embarrassed by Steven Adams.
Yeah.
So I would expect Towns to be coming in pretty motivated to try and do good things tonight.
Yeah, this is not a game that he can be quiet.
I'd look for big numbers for him. Yep.
All righty. Well, you heard it here first. Those are the guys to look out for tonight. Definitely go check out on Zone Coverage all the stuff that David and I are writing, all the stuff that wonderful staff covering the Timberwolves are writing, as well as everybody else who works at zonecoverage.com. Check out everything. There's some really great articles up. Just go check out Wolves Wire. Go check out all the stuff there. Definitely go check out the Locked On Wolves, where I bring on Lucas Hand of the Locked On Clippers, because the Timberwolves are playing the Clippers twice in the next week here. So listen to that podcast. That was really fun as well. David, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Colton. Always a pleasure.
This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.